You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
I'd like to welcome my listener to this episode of Hooked on Startups with Kyle Duford. So, Kyle, you are a famous speaker and deliverer of marketing wisdom. Is that, have I just sort of, the trouble is I hate reading these when you get these sort of media packs. It just sounds so dull. No, I'm not saying you're dull. I'm just saying if I read it out, it's just, you know, so it's much better if you explain the magic that you bring to the digital and marketing worlds.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I appreciate that because you give me the floor that is because those marketing packs, those speaker packs can be, I mean, they're so formatted, right? You can make anyone sound good. They're the
well,
new
it just doesn't mean anything to, you know, if you were to say that your pitch, as it were, or your, if someone says, come on, Kyle, what do you do? What's your magic? What makes you Kyle Duford? You know, so that's what's your sort of immediate sort of elevator pitch, as it were.
For me personally, I'd say like, I just try to leave businesses, brands, and people better than when I met them. And a lot of that comes down to what I do for a living, which is creating leading brands through our business here and kind of helping people position themselves. And that could be a personal brand. It could be a business brand. It could be anything, but help people position themselves in the marketplace, in society, in their local church. How do you get across who you are? What's unique to you? What's your value? What's your proposition? Who you are, I help people get across what you're asking me to do right now about myself. I try to get people to look at their businesses as an entity, their brand as a living, breathing thing, and to have it be even bigger and better and sometimes more refined and elevated than they thought it could have been. So that's kind of what we do through tools like marketing and digital marketing, design, strategy, and things like that.
And it's funny because who would you describe your typical client? Is it a small business? Is it a large corporate or...
It's a great question. We actually have a lot of businesses that come through that are small startups, could be well-funded small startups, but maybe just getting off the ground, as it were. Or some of our businesses go up to $500 million a year. And if you look at it just from a revenue standpoint, you think that's a big breath, and it is. But if you look at it from a proposition of how they can get better, typically that narrows it quite a bit. Our sweet spot is CEOs or founder-led businesses that come in and want to understand how they can take it to the next level. And that could be typically because they're either entering a new market, adding a new product line, took on some investment, maybe faced some bad PR, maybe hired a CEO for the first time and they used to run their business. Something that more people are getting eyes on them, or maybe they were the first of the brick wall and now some competitors are taking notice and they're starting to gun for them instead. So other people had changed their position to attack them or to kind of fortify their own position. Yeah. And so we kind of come in at that moment and really help brands deliver on who they say they are. I'm fascinated all the time. Again, it could be multi-million-dollar business or a startup, people who don't really have clear core values or a clear mission statement and vision statement, or they conflate the two, or they omit one. They don't understand how to talk to their customers in a different way than their competitors. They don't understand their brand archetype. And of course, the obvious aesthetic challenges they may or may not have. If they started their business in their garage and now it's a $200 million business and they've never looked at how their brand appears to other people, that can be resolved as well. But for the most part, we're helping folks reestablish or establish who they are in the marketplace, primarily from a brand's positioning strategically.
Would you say that the most important thing that you bring to your clients is perspective?
That's a great word for it. I don't know if I thought about it that way, but yeah, I think so, for sure.
Because I can cast my mind back because I've been an entrepreneur for decades, which really means I haven't been able to hold down a job for a long time. But when you're absolutely right. When you start something, it's all about the sample of one. What do I think? And this is my design. And this is what I think the customers are. And you do become very disconnected as a business owner or an entrepreneur or a business creator from the difference between what the audience is and what you think the audience is. So the question is sort of coming soon. But my point is that as business owners, do you find that they really start off the conversation with you by saying, why on earth would we take you on? We don't need marketing. We don't need branding. We know what we're doing. And then at the end of the meeting or the end of the conversation, it's like, oh my God, why wouldn't we take you on?
Yeah, it's sometimes they come to us because they want a logo. And we say, well, I mean, that's just a thing. That's just a part. It's an appendage of your brand. It's not really your brand. And that's really where the conversation starts. When you then get into the questions that you're talking about, and then we start talking about, well, your positioning and understanding your archetype and maybe even your brand essence and some things that are a little bit more like, do I really care about that stuff? The kind of the underpinnings of what we think makes a solid brand. That's when they're like, well, we don't know if we need that. But when you talk through it and you realize that they don't have a solid foundation, it's very self-evidentiary at the end of that conversation that they know they need something that they didn't know before. I'll give you a quick example, and it's been my favorite example as of late, and I've said this on a couple different podcasts, but we had a group come in, they wanted to go through a full rebrand, and through the process, they went, well, we don't know if we need to get this deep, we don't know, we're going to kind of huddle ourselves and come back. And when I caught up with them again, they said, well, we just don't know what we don't know. So we just said, why don't you come in for an hour, sit down with our team, we'll just talk things through, we see if you can kind of, you know, help put you on the right path, and if you work with us, great, and if you don't, that's fine too, you know, we just want to help you out. And one of the first questions we asked them individually, each in the room separately, was describe your business in three adjectives or less.
Yes.
And all three of them, all the three C-suite members who said this, couldn't have had more disparate answers. And when we brought them back in and we shared them with each other, I mean, I'm not talking rocket science. We're talking just, hey, describe your business in three words and just alone and not looking at your colleague to your left or right, not looking at the founder necessarily. And they were all so different and so dependent on very, very core principles that were so different from one another that they looked at each other like almost like, what the hell are we doing? Like, no wonder our stuff is not working. And so we just said, look, let's help you figure out what that is. And in the resulting weeks, one of the people left and said, clearly I didn't get it. I was thinking about taking this in a different direction. And I was probably the one pulling you in the wrong way and off course. And the other two folks that were left decided to kind of figure it out together. And we may or may not work with them in the future. I'm not sure that's going to turn out. But the point is that the fundamentals were so key and they were missing it to the person they started the business with. So sometimes it's just a very easy conversation. At the end of it, they go, oh my gosh, like we were even thinking that. What other questions should we be asking ourselves?
Yes.
And in that case, then they go, wow, maybe we do need to think about this branding thing. And maybe this really isn't just a logo or the colors or the sign on the side of the building. It's really a lot more.
It is. And again, just coming back to what I was talking about earlier, is that obviously you'll have done some research, but there are some things presumably that leap out of the page when you start looking at a company's communications, the way that they present themselves. And I'm framing this on the basis that I think that what you do is incredibly important, but much overlooked by businesses at every stage, because they all think that they are marketing experts, or that you don't need marketing. The product will sell itself, or just run a few ads, or why would I get a logo or a design from you when I can get one for $5 online? So do you have to sort of disavow them of the fact that they are literally on the road to failure if they cannot figure out how to speak to their clients?
Yeah, and it can be a hard conversation, and it really can be. In a lot of businesses that come in, you're right, they think they know what they're doing, and many of them do. Look, I'm not going to take away from folks who've been in the business so long, they understand how to speak to a certain sector or industry or type of persona. That's going to happen. But when it comes down to, and you said something about everyone thinks they're a marketer, I'll take it one further. Everyone thinks they're a web designer because they use the internet. And I flush my toilet every day. It doesn't mean I'm a plumber. And so it's just really difficult sometimes to say, well, we understand what you're saying, but this is really why we do it this way. This is why we, meaning the industry, this is why there's a trend following this direction, or this is technically what Google is looking for when you put a paid search ad up or SEO optimization on your website. I mean, some of those fundamentals, they seem kind of like these days trite, and maybe the mystery is out of them a little bit because we use them every day, all day long. We have a mini computer in our pockets and so forth. But really, when it boils down to it, if you're not speaking to the right people with the right message at the right time, you're going to lose them. But it goes one step before you even start that process. It's not the right message. It's what are we even talking about? Are we talking about, like you mentioned, the product? Is the product any good or not? It might sell itself. It probably doesn't. What's the purpose? What's the why? Why are you trying to get this thing out there? Is it changing people's lives? Is it, why wouldn't I just go to another competitor who's cheaper or made in the US? There's so many different things. It always, always, always comes down to value proposition and position. Always at the end of the day, that's where it comes down to. So that's really where we start.
And do you think that the way that you communicate these values has changed in a, I'm not sure if we can call it a post-COVID environment, but do you see any significant changes? Because the world has just gone through a fairly life-changing sequence of events. And is there more of a move towards personal contact? Is there less interest or in emails and the sort of hands-off approach? Are you seeing a resurgence of sort of more old-fashioned values in terms of the way that you communicate messages?
It's a fantastic question. And yeah, I mean, the world has gone bonkers, right? And if you could put a silver liner on it at all, I think it's the fact that we've all went through something together. I mean, Never in our lifetime, almost before, since, I mean, I've heard people say maybe World War II, kind of where we're all, but even that affected different nations in different ways. There were nations that almost nobody was exonerated from this thing.
Astonishing, yeah.
Yeah, it was crazy. So for us to have been all in this together, it was quite fascinating. And what my wife says this all the time, that when we're pressed to the brink, humans, they act as if we hope we would. We do what I believe God created us to do, and that is to be kind to one another and to help one another. But we saw this recently, and days ago, there was flooding in New York City, and we saw complete strangers diving into water to try to rescue babies and people. And when tornadoes hit, I mean, we all go to help one another. I think fundamentally, that's what we're about. And so how the pandemic has helped us realize is that we really yearn for human connection. We really yearn to be connected somehow. And so, sure, marketing has changed because of that. And you saw some people try to kind of use it almost kind of like fake.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like, well, let's just pretend we care
about
it.
It's a bit like the equivalent of greenwashing, sort of COVID washing, as it were. So we're green, so use us. Or we disinfect our cameras every time we have a Zoom call, so use us, you know.
Well, I mean, you probably experience this yourself. We all get emails every day from a number of brands, maybe some more than others. And I remember the first one that came through was, here's what we're doing to keep you safe.
Yes.
Then it became another one. And there were big brands too. And I don't know exactly the names, but let's say there were Starbucks and Nike and Coca-Cola and Apple stores, whatever. And everyone was like, this is what we're doing to make you safe. Or we're closing down, or we're letting people work from home. But then it just trickled down. Everyone felt they needed to say something. And I even had a local, this was like before the stay-at-home order happened, I actually had my local barber, who I love to death, he's a great friend of mine, he sent something out saying, hey, can you, out of the kindness of your heart, can you send us some money? Because we might not have a job. And this was early on. This was before hotels were closing and restaurants were closing and people were out of jobs. And it was awful. And it just felt like it was another thing that was just another noise. And I remember in the midst of all of that, I stopped answering.
Yes.
I stopped opening emails rather. And it was just so overwhelming. It was like, yeah, I get it. You're probably sending your workers home and cleaning things like we all were. In the midst of all of that, I got this one email, and we've had him on our show, the CEO of Roan Apparel. His name's Nate Check. It's an extraordinary young man. And he said, we decided to send something out that just said, here's some things you can do to help your own mental health. Here's things you can do. It had nothing to do about their business.
Yeah.
And I loved it because it was like, no kidding, you're cleaning your stuff. No kidding, you're going to take care of your staff or donating money to the local restaurant association. And it was so refreshing. That's what people want in those moments, I believe. They really want to hear the spirit of what makes us who we are. It's the diving into water to save a baby thing. It's maybe on a lesser scale. It's just
I know what you mean. It's like I was having a similar conversation with our social media and design team, who are incredibly talented people who just see the world in a different way, thank goodness. And he brought my attention to Steakums. Again, just following on from what you're saying. So for those of you not familiar, which I wasn't, Steakums provides frozen beef sheets, you know.
I haven't heard of Steakums in years.
Never had one, but I mean, it doesn't sound terribly enticing. But their Twitter and their marketing campaign, they've got the blue Twitter tick, which I think is almost impossible. But it's so engaging because it's that sort of combination of really smart, intelligent, witty, timely comments, and at the bottom it says, oh, by the way, don't forget to buy some Steakums. It's the fact that it restores faith that you're not being bombarded by, you know, computer generated messages. But do you see that developing? Is there more of a move towards video, or, you know, how are we going to get back to that personal contact sort of phase that was so effective?
You know, years ago, I've always wanted to do a TED talk, and this was years ago, but I mean, years before pandemic started. I've always wanted to do like a TED talk or something about talking how like customer service is the last bastion of human interaction and connection. And unfortunately, so many people get it wrong, right? Including jobs that I've held before and customer service departments that were in my e-commerce departments or something. We all get it wrong. And it's frustrating to hear people complain and so forth. But I venture to bet that for some people who are working from home or alone at home or whatever, like I was thankful enough to have all of my children, but one who was at college, all of them. So five of the six were home with us during the quarantine.
Yeah.
My wife and I were together. We were able to work from home. It was great. But for all those folks who aren't privy to having a little cluster or a group or a bubble, or they live alone, it was very difficult for them. And I don't want to take away that at all, because very difficult for them mentally, emotionally, it had to be very hard. And I don't know what it was like, but I can imagine it was probably not fun. A lot of those people just in normal life, they order things online all the time. And so you could go days without having to speak to a single person.
Yep.
And the only person you speak to is somebody on the other end of the line when you call for customer service because you had a bad experience.
Yes.
And that person could change your day. They have the power in that moment to change your day. So why am I bringing this up? Well, I think in the post-pandemic or whatever stage we're in right now, middle, second part, pandemic, whatever, that I think that brands, businesses, humans like you and I are starting to realize that we have that power every day. We can greet people at the door differently. We can speak to people who we present to differently. We can not take ourselves so seriously. We can defer to other. I mean, we're not the best branding agency in the world. I think there are certain things we do really, really well that no one can do better. But by all means, there's other people who do better things than others. Why wouldn't I share that? Why wouldn't I? And I've told customers, hey, you know, we might not be great for this, but let me tell you about this other agency that we compete with normally.
Yeah,
I think that's really what we're going to start seeing. And it's the heart of us and how that's presented through a brand is, I believe, what we're going to see. And we're starting to see a lot of businesses do this. You see this kind of give back campaign, you know, like Tom's One for One was existing for a long time. There's a lot of heart in that. And I credit the millennial generation who wants to see kind of transparency in the supply chain and where money's going to, and social advocacy and inclusiveness and affirmation of minority groups. You see that happening anyway. But I think now, especially, we're starting to see a lot of businesses really look at the heart of who they are and how do you speak to somebody authentically from that position. And you can't, going back to what we originally talked about, you can't do that unless you have a firm understanding of your core values and what you believe as a business, and maybe as an individual leading your business, and how you're going to communicate that. Otherwise, it just falls short. It seems completely inauthentic and you lose people. So I think that's what we're steering toward, is this more human connection. And the definition of a brand really is the emotional connection between somebody and a product or service. So it's really getting back to the heart of what we enjoy as people. If that makes sense. I don't mean to be hopeful.
No, of course it does. And I just think that, just coming back to the COVID issue, one of the problems of COVID, one of the many problems of COVID, is that even though you would imagine it would actually bring people together, it's almost had like the opposite effect. And I think through the barrage of misinformation that's flooded social media since the very beginning, you've almost got these sort of two divides. So I think the thing that crosses that chasm is this sense of belief in the authenticity of a message. So it doesn't matter who you're talking to, whether they're A or B or one or two or red or blue or whatever. Do you think the thing that is now more likely to appeal to that vast cross-section is the sense that someone is actually talking to me truthfully, authentically? We use horrible words like passion and vulnerability, but do you think they really have meaning now and use much more so today than they would have done maybe 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think so. It's hard to get away from that. I'm always reminded of when there was just days of radio and DJs always felt like, and they were told to make it seem that if there's only one person listening, they felt that the DJ was speaking to them individually.
Yes.
And they feel important, right? And there could be millions of people listening. And I think that's definitely, that's coming out of the back of this for sure, is the importance of the consumer, the importance of the customer, not just as kind of the end user consuming your product and that's why they're important to help our bottom line, but more as a person and how am I serving them? And I have to ask myself, like, how am I serving humanity? Well, if I can help people not mortgage their house because I help make their business more successful, then we're helping people. But you also always have to ask yourself, what are we doing for the greater good? Now, not everyone does this and there's always going to be greed. And again, I don't want to sound too like Shangri-La here. I don't think it's attainable for everyone, but in the sense that if we can just realize that at the end of the day, what we do just isn't that important. Like, people are dying and people don't have health insurance. Some people are getting into arguments with their family about whether they should or shouldn't get vaccinated. It's just like, at the end of the day, like, we're only here for a short period of time. Let's make the most of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's trying to get all that across, and it's trying to, and it comes back to the conversations with the C-suite, with the CEOs, because your challenge, I guess, is you know all of this because that's the feedback that you're getting from the people that are their customers. But you say that it's that Shangri-La, isn't it? It's trying to, your challenge, I guess, is to distill this into a language that the CEOs of the other business owners understand and can relate to.
Right.
And so they can see that if they change their message, then ultimately it will convert to bottom line results.
Oh, and I absolutely believe that. I mean, I absolutely believe that. And I'm a capitalist as well. So like, I do want people to earn profits, and whether they keep it or invest it, like that's none of my business. But I believe in that fundamental like opportunity, especially here in the US, to do business, to make money and to make something of yourself. I just think the reasoning behind how you get there is being massaged a little bit these days. And so many people were affected by the last 2 years that, and you see this, you know, a CEO who, you know, his wife may have owned a restaurant or a beauty parlor, or in my case, a friend who has a barbershop or a nail, what do they call them?
Salon.
So you're right, exactly.
I've been to one once.
Yeah?
My wife forced me to get my toenails cut. It's like, for God's sake, you know, I've been doing this, you know, my entire life myself. I've been once. Salon, sorry.
The United States is built on the back of small business men and women who have strived for what we've always called the American dream. And so I've seen a lot of CEOs who their business was not affected at all. We personally had one of our best years during the pandemic. And so I believe it's incumbent upon those who either wrote it out or did better to look at other people who, for no fault of their own, I mean, the government shut your business down. I mean, it doesn't matter how much money you had in savings. You could not have kept that business open legally. So what do you do? No fault of their own, they had to figure out a way to help their employees. And I know restaurateurs who cut their own salary, sold a business so they can pay all their employees the entire time. Those are the kind of things that...
You get no thanks for. Yes. Well, they say no good turn goes unpunished. Yes.
I think there's a lot of folks who owe a lot of, if they're able to weather the storm, owe a lot of how they did that to their business.
Yes.
And there's a lot of small business people who, gosh, were so generous and kind because they realized that they had people that they had to care for. So, okay, get this back to branding and marketing, how we talk to people. I think how we go forward, whether you learn a lesson from any of this or not, whether there's a way to market your message or your product or how to reopen your business or whatever, I think what we've learned is people are valuable in and of themselves. And we need to speak to them in a way in which they're going to hear your information. Let them make a decision for their own. And if it works, it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And we see these a lot of like Super Bowls typically are like the litmus test and how to speak to people nowadays. Now you're seeing brands make light of themselves a little bit. Like it's not that big of a deal that we're around, but if you choose our beer over there, it's great. Like we're all in this together. Like I think that's really what it's about. So that's what we see. So if we can help craft that message, great.
And just changing gears slightly, what led you into this? I mean, so you're sort of the genesis or the pathway, or give us a bit of color about what your background is. And because you need to have experience in real life to be able to understand the validity of the messages. And so what were your sort of critical reference points that made you get to where you are today?
Yeah, I've spent a good part of my life, probably about the last 20 years or so, working on the brand side, not the agency side, and helping businesses grow in different ways. So mostly through e-commerce, but getting the message across through digital marketing or some other ways. And what I found was, you know, I was young when I first started in that business, and you know, there was no school for e-commerce at the time. This was on the back of people only having Yahoo stores, and Amazon and eBay had just come out. We're all trying to figure it out together, and happened to be very successful in that lane. And so I didn't think that's what I was going to do, but I found that I loved it. And what I learned was all businesses have the same fundamental issues. It's just at what speed can they understand them and overcome those challenges. And so whether they're bigger or smaller, sometimes doesn't matter. It's how you can solve the problem. And so when I was in those businesses, seeing how we tried to grow and seeing how we tried to work with, it could be anyone, the distributor, the wholesale folks, the people internally from finance to customer relations, whatever it was. And I was fortunate enough in my life to have worked with some really, really great brands like Dr. Martin's footwear. I was at Nike for a hot minute on a project. I was at Keen Footwear for a while, their sister company, Chrome Industries. I was at Spec Products, one of the first folks who made cases for iPhones in particular. And I found that there's this really cool connection you can get. I worked for great brands, but really cool connection you can make with people who love your product and how you can listen to them to how, because you're in existence, you help make their lives better. Now, sometimes you go like, what is a cell phone case company? How do they make my life better? Well,
Try dropping your phone, see what happens.
Exactly. And especially I was telling someone this morning that getting real estate on somebody's personal device is harder than ever because we take these things so personally and there's so much. I mean, this is, I've got everything in this, you know, everything from my bank account to my children's photos, my license, and it's very personal. So you're right. It's very important to protect that. You find that people are very, very excitable about what case it is. And then you get into this, this was long before colors came into play. This is clear. And then you get to colors and at Spec, we came up with tons of different colors and they were brilliant over there and the folks who designed them. And then you get into printed things. And then it was just so wild. And it's just how you can just change people's day just by bringing that to them. So I learned a lot in that way. And then when I got into some footwear companies and some men's fashion and outerwear products and things, I just really understood that it doesn't matter what you sell because there's a consumer who identifies with what you're trying to get across. And if you can meet them where they need to be met, then you've got something really, really special. That kind of magical handshake deal you have with your customer is so valuable. And I just found I was gravitating to that moment of decision or repeat purchase. What makes somebody come back again and again and again to buy a pair of Dr. Martens or to run in a pair of Nikes or throw a chrome bag on your back? What is that? What is it? And it comes back to it's this thread that you can't really articulate, but it runs through everything. And that's what we call a brand. It's how it makes you feel when you look at it, when you wear it, when you buy it, when you smell it. When you smell a brand new pair of Dr. Martens, you know it's legit. You know, it's, you want to get that same experience in a bottle when you go to one of their retail stores, or you shop online, or you see an advertisement. So it's at that moment of understanding of like, gosh, it clicks. It's like you met your soulmate. That's what interests me. And so I was able to understand that if I could help people craft that moment, then I might be onto something. And that's what kind of led me into branding.
And all of these experiences are very consumer orientated. Do they translate the learnings into B2B or other types of industries which don't have such a consumer focus?
That's a fantastic question. And I appreciate you going there because you're right. I worked almost exclusively with D2C or what we call B2C companies, direct to consumer, business to consumer. And now almost exclusively, all of our clients are B2B. And what I've learned is that it's like riding a bike. It's the same. You're still making a decision. Now you're either making a decision with somebody else's money or for your business and how one business can help another versus you just trying to get something that might better your life or just something you just want. And so that moment of decision is still the same thing. You still have to connect with them on some level. And in many ways, almost a more authentic way, because businesses to businesses typically omit a lot of that fluffy marketing stuff. You know, it's not very particular fun to talk about what air conditioning unit you're going to put on top of your skyscraper because it's not very sexy. But someone still has to purchase that unit, or I mean, we're talking like massive units, right? But in the sense that if you can kind of understand that same feeling of what make people connect over a product, whether it's a commoditized product or consumable or business to business service, then it's the same thing. So it's kind of very similar. The nuances might be different. The messaging might be different, but at its core.
And does it boil down to people? Is it really, if you distill communications, is it really, if you strip out all of the brands and all of the products and the companies, is it really just how good is one company at communicating to another company or another person? Is it almost like you can put the two of them together and if they can't speak, if they can't share views, they're never going to work? Is your job to act as the universal translator, the Babel fish, as it were, the way of communicating or translating what someone wants to say into what someone wants to hear?
Yeah, that's a really interesting way of looking at it. I don't know if it's mastering the art of communication as much as it's mastering the art of understanding who you are, or in this case, who your brand is. Because maybe some younger people might not know this, but the Leave It to Beaver show, the Eddie Haskell character, did you have this in England?
No, we didn't. No, we had other things. We had Fawlty Towers with John Cleese.
Oh, I mean, John Cleese, of course. I mean,
I'm not sure that's different, but that's just better than everything that was ever created. So.
Well, we had this show in the 50s, and I didn't watch it in its first run, but most Americans know Eddie Haskell. And he basically, we all had friends like this growing up. He kind of smooth talked the parents and anything. He was just kind of a jerk most of the time, but the parents thought he was great. And so he mastered communication, but he wasn't authentic.
Yes.
And so you can do that. You can have the slickest sales stuff and you can have the best salesman and stuff. But if you're not at the core who you say you are, eventually you're going to get found out.
That is the core. It is authenticity. It's the fact that you feel as a consumer that you are actually talking to someone on a one-to-one basis,
yes,
on a level playing field, that you're not being had by some marketing BS, as it were, that you feel that you're genuinely interacting with someone.
Yeah, well, I can't control what you might think about how my marketing materials look, or if I give something over to a business to on behalf of one of our clients and they read it and then they share it with everyone. I can't control that moment of how they're sharing, how they're taking it in. All I can control is who we are, or in this case, who our clients are. All we can do is say, this is us. And you either jive with us or you don't. And it's okay if you don't. But trying to always chase that kind of golden ticket is where businesses get stuck, because you're not going to be the same person for everyone. You're not going to be a one size fits all, and that's okay. So understand your audience. You know, nowadays, talking about digital marketing, now you can really find the folks who are most likely to purchase, because you can find people who look exactly like them through dynamic targeting and retargeting and so forth. Especially in B2B, you can't just give somebody the same thing and expect everyone to like it. It's just not going to happen. So be authentic with who you are and find the right people that fit that, rather than try to fit yourself to everybody else.
And you must have some fantastic stories where you've gone in as a completely independent third party, different perspective, different point of view. As you say, you listen, you had that story about the three sort of C-suites. Are there other occasions that you can remember where you've had that real clang as the moment of realization hits the floor, as it were, where, you know, people suddenly get what you're talking about?
Yeah, it happens quite a bit. And sometimes it happens in one of my favorite phases, when we name a business, when it all just comes together and you're just like, wow, this could be really powerful.
You get those cold winds that brush across your temple.
Yeah, there's one brand, I can't tell you who it is right now because they haven't launched yet, but a brand new brand from an existing company that has done other things, and they wanted to put this one brand out. And while the owner was talking, he was just like, I don't know, it's just something like this and something like this. And he'd done all this research about this. I think it was how, I'm going to get this wrong, but it was something about how, like, when the temperature of which hydrogen freezes or something, and it emits four different types of colors. Our creative director and I looked at each other and I'm like, that's the name of the company. And I'm like, I think it should be called this.
Yes.
And he went off quickly and went, or a CD went off and quickly created something with how colors match these things. And we created this entire brand based on the back of this conversation. He's like, wow, this is perfect. How did you? And I'm like, well, you did all this. And it was like, it dawned on him and it dawned on us at the same time. Like, wow, all of this, the synergies are just ripe. And it just happened. It was just like this big epiphany for everyone. And when those things happen, they're glorious. Now, it doesn't make the rest of the process necessarily easy. And then sometimes you're just, while you're in a presentation mode, and we're not one of those businesses or agencies that kind of consume all the information, walk away and come back and present to you. Like, we do it together as a partnership, and we like to do that. So people aren't surprised.
Yes.
And so sometimes in those workshop meetings or in those kind of like brainstorm sessions, whiteboard sessions, somebody will just say something and we're like, wait a second, unpack that. Almost like you're in a therapy session. And they're like, well, this is how I've always felt. Or it could be like the secretary who's been there for 40 years and saw three CEOs come and go. And she's like, well, really, this is what we're about. And we're like, how come no one asked her?
Yes.
Or him. It could be anyone.
Right? It must be such fun being so sort of creative, you know. So
yeah, or it can be very daunting. But it's fun. And we've got a great creative team here. And you know, sometimes they just come up with things that are just brilliant. And if we do our job right, all we're doing is we're just pitching things back to you that you already told us about yourself. We're just doing it in a different package.
Yes.
And if we do it right, then you just like, it's like when you finally see the car you always want, you're like, ah, gosh, this is really me.
I know what you mean. You know it when it comes along. Yeah. Yes.
You just know it when you see it. So it's our job to kind of distill it down and kind of present it back. And that's pretty fun.
Well, from epiphanies to you Googlers, or eulogies, or whatever how it's pronounced, I still think that you Googly is the correct pronunciation, courtesy of Ben Stiller in Blue Steel, I think, you know, one of the all-time favorite movies of all time. But I have some questions for you, Kyle. The Hooked on Startups Quickfire Questionnaire, for it is that time.
Well, I think I'm ready.
People say that. I've heard that many times.
Listen, I've actually thought about it. I was at the beach this weekend for Labor Day.
Oh, no, you don't.
I talked to my wife about it. I'm like, I know these things.
You know the answers. Tricky questions like number one. Kyle, what is your favorite word?
Joie de vivre.
Ah. Fantastique.
Yeah, right.
Question.
Well, I'm French.
Parfait.
I know, so question. You must love me, right?
Question numéro deux. I'm going to do this in a French accent. What is your least favorite word?
My least favorite word is the N-word. I hate it, but hopefully that's the baseline for everyone. So I'll say moist.
Yes, that's what makes a market, I guess. Question number three. What are you most excited about right now?
Right this moment, no offense to you at all, but to get out of here, go home, see my wife.
I'll rattle through these really quick. Question number four. What turns you off right now?
Right now, it's kind of discrimination of any kind. I live in the South, and it's bizarre to me how discrimination is just rampant. And so my wife and I fight hard for the marginalized communities. And whether you're gay, straight, black, white, doesn't matter. I just think discrimination of any kind just irks me. And so we try to fight against it.
Fantastic. Question number five. What sound or noise do you love?
My wife has this unbelievable little lisp. And it is just, I hear that across the room, I just smile. I've known her for 25 years and it still gets me every time.
Fantastic. And question six, what sound or noise do you hate?
Any type of sad crying, like joyful tears or thankful tears is fine, but sad crying, like that kind of like sobbing, it hurts. I don't like it.
Question seven, what is your favorite curse word?
Fuckface.
Fuckface. Oh, brilliant. Good. Onomatopoeic. Fantastic.
That's right.
Question number eight. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Oh, I always thought I'd be a great film director. I've always wanted to do that. Maybe I'll still get a chance one day, but that's, yeah, for sure.
Well, I think, you know, the time is still there. You are but a spring chicken. So
maybe.
Question nine. What profession would you not like to attempt?
Oh, anything involving cleaning of any kind. Anything. Just bath-breaking work. Just cleaning. I don't care if it's cleaning a transistor on the assembly line or janitor. And I don't mind cleaning my house, but cleaning other people's stuff, like, it just drives me crazy. I could not do that.
Yeah. So hands off to all the cleaners out there for what a fantastic job you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. Because they have a heart of gold. That's for sure.
Yes. And the final question, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Well, I'm pretty confident it does exist. And I would hope that I heard what they say in the scriptures that you'd hear, that Jesus just says, well done, my good and faithful servant. And then I'd be happy.
Fantastic. Carly, it's been such a pleasure having you on. Thank you for all of the distilled wisdom that you've delivered. And how do people get in touch with you? How do they find out more about how they can tap into that enormous expertise, experience, and talent that you have?
Well, thanks for saying that. I mean, I'm only made good by the people who surround me, and we've got a great bunch of folks here, strategists, designers, copywriters, developers, and you can find us at thebrandleader.com, and you can send us a note at hello@thebrandleader.com, and that typically gets forwarded to me at some point, and I can answer any questions, or we can rattle off some more conversations, or people can talk to us about whether it's alliteration or onomatopoeia.
Thanks once again for being on the show, and really look forward to staying in touch.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.